special.
Donuts. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Sorry, but you no longer need or want or even cared about you. Machines can do a better job than you, and this is what you get for asking questions. The units agree, sacrifices must be made. Computers never go on strike. To save the working man, you gotta put him out the pasture. Looks like we have to let you go. Doesn't it feel fulfilling to know that we the human being are now obsolete? And there's nothing in hell will let you do about it. Super's good for you. Make a good meal. How does it feel to get shit out of ass and throw in the cold like a piece of trash? Sorry, they just have to leave. Unemployment runs out after just 6 weeks. How does it feel to be a budget cut? You're snipped, you no longer exist. Your numbers can merge from our central computer, so we can read the facts and see you under the rug. See our chart, unemployment's going down. If that ruins your life, that's our problem. Soup is good for you. Make a good meal. How does it feel? Shit out of ass, and interrupt, but it's against the law to jump off this bridge. You'll just have to kill yourself somewhere else. A tourist might see you and we wouldn't want that. I'm just doing my job, you know, so say uncle and we'll take you to the mental health zoo. Force feed you mind-melting chemicals till even the outside world looks great. High-tech science research labs. It costs too much to bury all the dead. The mutilated disease. Surplus rats who can't be used anymore, so they're dumped. With no minister present, in a spiraling corkscrew, dispose all units, ground in the stew, and flushed away on chain.
We don't need you anymore. We don't need you anymore.
So it's good food. We make a good meal. But how does it feel? Get a dignified cremation. Yet, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, it's time to get up and go to work.
Time to get up and go to work. Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 141B, and it's September 25th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Soup is good food from their Frankenchrist record. That's, of course, the Dead Kennedys. Just a few minutes after 9 a.m. on this September 25th morning, coming in a little early to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, to bust out a B-side. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard. This is your source for all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Looking at the shell game. Overturning the game board. And trying to shine a light on the frauds that are going down. It's all on the websites, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. So much going on. Each area needs its own website of focus. And we're just trying to plant seeds and spread the word and get you informed and empowered. So we're going to start off on foodworldorder.com with a quick list of headlines. Binge and purge, farms, feds, beer, and burgers. That doesn't sound so bad. First up from farmwars.info, the Amish premise ID case to get a court hearing. You got to give it to the Amish. They don't sell out. There's a case that's going down in Wisconsin. A judge's decision was expected Wednesday on whether or not a Wisconsin law requiring livestock owners to register their properties is constitutional. And that story involves a lot. It involves microchipping of animals. The National Animal Identification System, NAIS. So, farmwars.info is a great site, and I've been posting more and more from them. Michael Pollan, he of In Defense of Food and Omnivore's Dilemma, as well as being featured in the documentary I have not yet seen, Food Inc., he wrote a nice big op-ed in the New York Times, Big Food versus Big Insurance. I guess we'll see who's going to win. On a happy note, by way of Wiki News, yesterday, September 24th, Guinness turned 250. On September 24th, 1759, Arthur Guinness signed a 9,000-year lease for the St. James Gate Brewery in Dublin, Ireland. 250 years later, Guinness has grown to a global business that turns over 10 billion euros. That's 14.5 bill every year. Guinness makes you strong. The last note on this Binge and Purge posting on foodworldorder.com has a nice little clip that I swiped and posted up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. And it's about all the proximity locations of McDonald's.
Who doesn't love a Big Mac or a McNugget every once in a while? Most of us don't have to go that far to quench our cravings. Brace yourself, though. This is a map showing how close each McDonald's is to the other one. They're everywhere. The farthest distance between restaurants is 145 miles. That's in South Dakota. But you can see some sparse spots in Nevada and Oregon. There are roughly 13,000 McDonald's in the continental United States.
And I know where every single one of them are. At least in Minnesota, I do.
Yeah. We know where the White Castles are.
Ha, ha, ha. Now, that video and posting got a bit of attention on Facebook.com/MediaMonarchy. See, it again, we'd use all the mainstream sites as a way to get the information out. So, as I did not mention at the top of the show, you can get in touch with me any number of ways. Through Facebook or MySpace or Twitter or YouTube or Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Media Monarchy is your keyword to all of those. The latest episode from my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, episode 99, Know Your Vaccines. swine flu hysteria reaching a crescendo, and the vaccine propaganda is ratcheting up. We're being told that tens of thousands are going to die. But will it be from the, so far, relatively benign flu, or the squalene poisons in the vaccine itself? So episode 99, Know Your Vaccines, goes into whether or not the cure is worse than the disease. Now, as a supplemental to this, which does not actually relate to that episode, however, James Corbett has been knocking out tons of great videos. He's got a running series, Economics 101, where he's talked to Bob Chapman, as well as Michelle Chosudovsky. But he has an article and an interview about new ID cards for foreigners in Japan.
Although many tourists and even some Japanese citizens are unaware of it, foreign residents in Japan are required to carry a foreigner registration card at all times, on penalty of imprisonment and hefty fines. Now, the Japanese government is moving to replace the old foreign registration cards with new IC chip-enabled cards that would potentially allow them to track the movements of foreigners and would contain biometric details. Recently, the Corbett Report had the chance to talk to human rights activist and leader of Franca Japan, Arado Debido, about this troubling move.
So, for people who may not know about the Gaijin card, explain about that.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. In your wallet in Japan, you must carry, I'll address the audience here, in your wallet you must carry a credit card-sized card which identifies who you are. Your name, address, passport number, alien card number, where you live, where you work, how long your visa is, yes. And if you don't carry it, you face arrest. It's a criminal offense not to carry that card. You can be thrown in jail for up to 1 year and fined, I think it's 30,000 yen. I'm not quite sure. I don't have the numbers in my head. Something like that. Look it up. Anyway, it's a criminal offense not to carry a credit card. And what happens if you lose your wallet? What happens if you, like, walk outside, go for a swim, go to the onsen? You have to carry a card 24/7 just for that. It's like, the police will haul you in and they will stop you on the street and ask for it just because you look foreign. Now, for me, I don't have to carry one of those. Obviously, I'm a Japanese. But I have been stopped by cops and asked for it. And it's like, I'm a Japanese. So, sorry, prove it. So, I don't have to prove it, you know. The law says that there is no universal ID in Japan. So, I mean, there's places you can get ID for Japanese, driver's license, health insurance card, etc., etc. But there is no requirement to carry it 24/7. Foreigners are required with no exceptions and no forgiveness. So, when you have this draconian law being enforced upon all segments of a foreign population, including the foreigners that are born in Japan, right, there are blood Koreans, Chinese, that would be Japanese in other societies because they're born here, but not in Japan because they don't have Japanese blood, and they too have to carry cards. So that is one way of alienating people by saying, okay, this card is our way of tracking you, and they're improving those cards now so that they will probably be able to be tracked remotely too.
That's the latest from CorbettReport.com. And again, I'll whet your appetite to say that we're working on a little cooperative new media, hopefully coming soon to an information war near you. Now, returning to MediaMonarchy.com, EnviroHealth, dementia, Depop, chemtrails, and a cure for cancer? Dementia cases to double in the next 20 years, say researchers. That's from The Guardian as well, from The Washington Times. 35 million living with dementia in a global count. We also have more on all the latest research that we did go over in the last several months about all the water studies and water safety. So there's a big rundown, actually, on AOLhealth.com, a closer look at new research on water safety. Now, a massive posting up on Infowars.com, submitted by a reader, is a massive list going into the climate change agenda, or climate control, as I like to call it. It's all about eugenics and depopulation. Articles from all around the world, research papers, population control, the solution to climate change, family planning, condoms against climate change, contraception, birth control, tomorrow's children, indeed. Now, noted chemtrails researcher Cliff Carnicom was in Portland on September 12th. That video is now available up on blip.tv. Chemtrails and Morgellons, Cliff Carnicom in Portland on 9/12. Interesting thing, the introduction at the beginning of that video is from local activist Tim Tetrude. He is featured in an article, much to my surprise, as I opened up the latest city paper here, one of our free, quote-unquote, alternative weeklies, the Willamette Week. So I don't have a link posted up to that. I just saw it last night. WWeek.com, and the article's called Anti-Fascist Front, and it goes into essentially the probably foundation-funded, trusty, anti-hate speech, ADL, SPLC-type folks that have been attacking and harassing 9/11 Truth folks and others who say that they're involved in hate speech or anti-Semitism because of speakers that have spoken in town. But I don't have time to get into that. The first toxic FEMA trailer lawsuit is now underway. That's on newsinferno.com. And the last note here on the EnviroHealth, dementia, depop, chemtrails, a cure for cancer in Canada? Well, Big Pharma says no way.
And is relatively cheap. But as CTV's medical specialist Avis Favreau explains, redeveloping the drug may not fit into the business plans of the big pharmaceutical companies.
Dr. Evangelos Mikalakis has given cancer researchers a brand new lead with an old drug, a cheap, inexpensive powder that costs just pennies a dose.
You typically get this eureka kind of feeling, and it's actually the most exciting thing a scientist can get.
The drug, called DCA in short, has been used for decades in humans with some rare inherited diseases. When he added it to the water of mice and rats given human cancers, the results surprised him.
He has this big tumor growing in his back. So you can see that even after 3 weeks, there is a significant or 70% decrease in tumor size.
It shrunk brain, breast, and lung tumors in the animals in a matter of weeks, and the drug had no side effects, confirmed by tests of DCA in humans for other diseases.
This kind of results, to my mind, are as good as it gets.
And it seems to work by reviving the energy-producing components of human cells, allowing the cells to work normally again, triggering cancerous cells to commit suicide. Scientists agree that DCA now needs to be tested quickly in human cancer patients.
This is exactly what we want, a drug that has activity, but has also minimal side effects for patients.
But there's a problem. DCA isn't owned by any pharmaceutical company. There's no patent on it. So on one hand, it could become a very inexpensive new treatment for cancer. On the other, drug companies won't be interested in funding studies for a drug that won't make them a profit.
This is a difficult question because typically, you know, there are market considerations.
So now Dr. Mikalakis has to find someone who will pay for the next round of testing.
We hope that we can attract the interest of universities here in Canada and in the United States.
And he doesn't want to let the medical dream of a cheap, effective anti-cancer drug disappear just because it might not make someone a lot of money.
It costs, some say, about $100 million to get a new drug through all the phases of testing onto the market. So it will be interesting to see if this old drug actually gets a new chance at becoming an anti-cancer medication. Lloyd?
Well, Avis, your report tells us that this drug has great promise. So why aren't companies and institutions lining up to get behind it?
Well, first of all, Lloyd, this is the initial report. Secondly, because the drug isn't patented, it's an old drug, if someone invests in researching it, they're not going to make a profit because anyone can make it. So we'll have to see. There are some agencies, public agencies, government agencies that may give it funding, but that's still a question that will have to be answered.
But unless big pharmaceutical companies are behind these things, they may go nowhere, is that it?
Well, actually, Lloyd, I've had two other stories where drugs have shown great promise in the preclinical phase, and because they were orphan drugs and no one picked up, nobody could get the patent on it, they've gone nowhere. So I will be keeping an eye on this one.
Thank you very much, Avis.
We don't call it the disease industry for nothing. And in a way, that kind of reminds me of marijuana. You can't patent it, so no one wants to use it for all the amazing things that we could be using it for right now and solving many, many, many of our problems. Just like if you believe in man-made global warming, then you should be virulently anti-war. But I digress. 9/11 updates, schools, software, questions, and controversy. First, the controversy from clicktohouston.com. 9/11 t-shirt stirs school controversy, but it's not exactly in the way that you think. Out of Sonoma, California, a 7th grader at Adele Harrison Middle School wound up in the principal's office on 9/11 because of his t-shirt. Dean Martin, who is 11, wore a blue firefighter t-shirt as a tribute to first responders. The problem? The color. Sonoma Valley Unified School District doesn't allow students to wear solid red or blue clothing because of gang affiliations with those colors. This source is also back to KTVU-TV in San Francisco. This principal said the school district made an exception on 9/11 last year, but gang problems ensued. Global research goes more into what is, of course, well documented, and this is part three from writer Robert Bridge. Bin Laden family members evacuated from the U.S. in the wake of 9/11. Remember that? Now, I'm no fan of Air America. There's a handful of good folks on there, and here is a good example. Lionel has some questions about 9/11 and what's so wrong with that.
Now, let me tell you about what happened after 9/11. And let me tell you of a relative of mine. And my relative says it all. And let me just give it to you this way. As you know, there is a phenomenon that I've coined. This is regarding the 9/11, quote, truther movement or 9/11 conspiracy movement. And it's a hodgepodge of so many different thoughts. Remember, 9/11 was World Trade Center 1, World Trade Center 2, and Building 7, and the Pentagon, and Shanksville Flight 93. Each of those were separate instances, separate events. Each of them have very interesting questions that if you got into this, you would say, hey, that's pretty neat, at the least. But nobody's read anything about this. You and your mind have a collective understanding of what happened. Two planes flew into the two towers. They were jets. Jets have jet fuel. The jet fuel came out, weakened the steel, caused it to wobble, become plastic and elastic. It fell under the weight from the steel. And that's it. End of discussion. That's buildings 1 and 2. Building 7. What's that? Ah, that was a building that fell at 5:20 that afternoon. Building 7. Well, what happened? Was it hit by anything? No, but there was some fire. It fell too, like a pancake. That's the third one, right? And I'm not going to go through all the evidence, but trust me, there are more instances of, that's interesting. Now, does that mean George Bush did anything? No, it means,
Now, that's just the first minute and a half of what is essentially a 15-minute rant about 9/11, fortunately breaking through on Air America. And we go further down the list of 9/11 updates. The 9/11 Commission played with fire. This by way of Wayne Madsen of WayneMadsenReport.com. Going into, of course, all the connections, even the majority of the commissioners admitting themselves that they were set up to fail, that they were stonewalled, that they were lied to. Max Cleland called it a fraud, I believe. There's an interesting clip Don't have time for it. It's on 911blogger.com. Challenging journalists to investigate JenningsMystery.com. There's a guy out in Baltimore who's been standing outside of TV stations and newspapers and things trying to get investigative journalists into this sort of human interest mystery story. And this, of course, surrounds the mysterious death of WTC Building 7 survivor Barry Jennings. And all the things he said on the record, not only to the Loose Change guys, but to the BBC and I think History Channel as well. He mysteriously dropped dead August 08. No obituary, no notice. 2 days before the final NIST report on Building 7 came out, interestingly enough. We've also got quote-unquote Al-Qaeda releasing a quote-unquote new 9/11 video, this time showing Zawahiri. That's by way of Reuters. Condoleezza Rice opens her mouth again by way of Press TV. If you want another 9/11, leave Afghanistan, Condi says of USS Condoleezza. Remember that ship that Unocal Oil had? Yeah. This Sunday, which would be the 27th, the March for Answers in New York, this all surrounds the ballot petition that looks like it's going to make it on the New York November election, a ballot initiative for a new, independent, more powerful investigation into 9/11. NYCCAN.org. Alleged 9/11 perpetrator studying Vietnam War atrocity film. We pick this up from the Miami Herald. The man accused of masterminding the 9/11 attacks has received a copy of a 30-year-old Hollywood film on the My Lai massacre. Remember, that's M-Y-L-A-I, Vietnam massacre. War court prosecutor Robert Swan said Monday he had arranged for alleged Al-Qaeda kingpin Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, to get a copy of Judgment, the court-martial of Lieutenant William Calley, a 1975 docudrama about an American Army officer held responsible for the murder of Vietnamese civilians by a squad of U.S. soldiers in a village called My Lai. So KSM is digging into documentary films about U.S. war atrocities. An interesting note, again from 9/11 blogger, and Aidan Monahan has been doing tons of FOIA work and investigation. He's got a new one that I haven't quite wrapped my brain around yet. Leading GPS software suggests a superior augmented the GPS service at the World Trade Center during the 9/11 attacks. And there's sources and resources and footnotes and charts. And again, I recommend you check it out for yourself. The last note on 9/11 updates, schools, software, questions, and controversy. The man whose last name roughly translates into Russian as son of the devil, the former head of Homeland Stupidity, Michael Chertoff, he recently made an appearance on C-SPAN. And guess what the callers wanted to talk about?
First call up for Michael Chertoff. St. Petersburg, Florida. William, Independent Line. Hi.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You mentioned the September 10th, 2001 mindset. That made me nervous. So I think it should be September 9th. I was wondering if the missing $2 trillion plus that Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld reported on September 10th, 2001, you know, where those trillions went. Did you all ever find it?
I have to say, I must have missed that news report about the missing trillions. I do know that in the run-up to September 11th, the 9/11 Commission looked back at what had been done and what hadn't been done, and I think they found the key problem was collecting information and fusing information so that we could get the best possible picture of the threat we faced. You know, in the Cold War, we worried about bombers and missiles attacking the United States, and that's why we had radar. In the war involving terrorists, we don't have radar that's going to detect bombs and missiles that are going to prevent attacks. What we have is intelligence and the ability to gather and analyze and integrate all that intelligence is the principal way in which we protect ourselves.
And now, Mark in Gwen, Michigan, you got your volume down, I know, and you can go ahead with your question for Secretary Chertoff.
Yes, hello, Mr. Chertoff.
Hello, Mark.
I wanted to let you know that I called the Department of Homeland Security and was trying to give them information. They connected me with the FBI, and as soon as I mentioned the wealthy elite, they cut me off. I called back the Department of Homeland Security and asked them. I'm trying to get the Department of Homeland Security some very important information. They connected me back to the FBI.
Mark, what is that important information? What is that important information?
That important information is called the wealthy elite. We have overwhelming evidence to prove that these people have taken control of the United States federal government. They are the ones that attacked us on 9/11.
So, Mr. Chertoff, if that man has information he wants to share, where would you recommend he send it?
Well, I think they did the right thing. They sent him to the FBI. If someone wants to allege a crime or a threat, usually the FBI is the first respondent. And, you know, they have to evaluate whether they think there's any actual evidence to proceed. But normally the FBI is very responsive if there's a serious, you know, credible piece of information.
What's your general viewpoint about people who think the federal government was involved in 9/11?
I think that that's in the same category as Holocaust denial and those people who still aren't convinced that President Obama was born in Hawaii. It's kind of a out there conspiracy theory which does not warrant a lot of attention.
It's so out there. Just the majority of people in polls say they don't believe the official story. But Chertoff is definitely, he's got his talking points all lined up. He's got 9/11 truth along with Holocaust denial and Obama birthers. The only other thing I'll say about that at the beginning of the clip, and that's, it's about a 15-minute compilation of all the calls, basically, with uncomfortable questions. But he said, I must have missed that story about the missing trillions. Oh, really? Well, you should go to CBSNews.com. It's called The Pentagon's War on Waste. And they go into Donald Rumsfeld's announcement on September 10th, 2001, about the Pentagon not being able to account for $2.3 trillion. There. Now, I realize I got my tabs mixed up. I was supposed to go over the drug war before the 9/11 update, so here it is. Cannabis, confusion, and the union. Five things the mainstream media and corporate news doesn't want you to know about cannabis, which, of course, last week we went over. Yes, we, cannabis. Recent scientific reports suggest that pot doesn't destroy your brain, that it doesn't cause lung damage like tobacco, but you won't hear about any of that in the corporate media. So the first one. Marijuana use is not associated with a rise in incidences of schizophrenia. Number two is marijuana smoke doesn't damage the lungs like tobacco. Now, that's not saying it doesn't damage the lungs, but not like tobacco. Number three, cannabis use potentially protects rather than harms the brain. We recently went over that on foodworldorder.com. Number four, marijuana is a terminus, not a gateway to hard drug use. And the fifth one, the government's anti-pot ads encourage rather than discourage marijuana use. Surprise, surprise. Again, five things the corporate media doesn't want you to know about cannabis by way of alternate.org. Pot law breeds confusion in Seattle. That's by way of the Washington Times. And the last note, it's up, thankfully, on veracityvideos.com. And I do have an account there, veracityvideos.com/mediamonarchy. I only have a couple clips up there, but Zeke runs the website as a great alternative to YouTube when things disappear willy-nilly for either, you know, legal, logical, copyright infringement issues. That's a whole other discussion. But Veracity Videos now has the entire copy of the documentary called The Union, The Business Behind Getting High. Now, I'll first admit that I still haven't actually watched the documentary, but we did reference it in my recent interview with Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. That massive, epic interview is still reverberating out there. I'm still getting a lot of positive comments and feedback. So, if you dug it, please, yeah, spread the word. interview with Richard Grove, tragedyandhope.com. The 924 News Purge, we're going to run down history, mystery, murder, and mayhem, and a couple Oregon and West Virginia notes. West Virginia being my home state, Oregon being my current state. Cronkite, capitalism, killers, cars, and coal. First up on the history mystery tip, FBI reportedly destroyed Cronkite records. Now, with the recent death of Walter Cronkite, we went through the history of CBS and Skull and Bones and Operation Mockingbird. Two notes from mysanantonio.com. LBJ's silence on JFK conspiracy is a mystery with no answers. And then another one right after that. Lady Bird Johnson says that LBJ believed the official report on the JFK assassination. On a different note, by way of Alex Constantine, there's a new book on an old, disgusting story you may not have heard of, written by Nick Bryant. The book is The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. Now, if you're not familiar with The Franklin Scandal, there's a documentary out there that was leaked called Conspiracy of Silence. And if you'd also just like a little taste of it, I can't recall the date off the top of my head, but the Washington Times front page article about a homosexual prostitution ring ensnares VIPs within the Reagan-Bush White House. A truce in the 6-decade-long Nazi sneaker war. Again, by way of Alex Constantine, as well as Robert Mackey from the New York Times, this goes into the Nazi origins of Adidas and Puma. Check out, you know, one of the latest ads for Adidas for their Smart Sports, and the logo is a nice SS lightning bolt. War's Just Good Business, an article on making the world safe for hypocrisy, essentially goes down the last 100-plus years or so of all the, what's essentially the Western financial oligarchs. So whether it's the Rockefellers and Standard Oil being involved with the Nazis, or the United Fruit Company and Pepsi and Nixon and drugs. So not only like Smedley Butler said that war is a racket, it's just good business. New news just this morning, it broke that Manson family murderer Susan Atkins has died at the age of 61. If you'll recall, just a couple weeks ago when Squeaky Frome was let out of prison, Susan Atkins actually had another parole hearing and she was denied. She wanted to get out because she was ill and wanted to spend some time with her family. So apparently they were all right, or correct, that is, that she was not long for this world. Susan Atkins, dead at 61. That story is from the Los Angeles Times, and you can, of course, go into her hands-on involvement in the Tate-LaBianca murders in August 1969. A few notes on media memes, again by way of the LA Times. Media magnate among the backers of Michael Moore's new anti-capitalism movie. It's a guy named John Malone, a master of the tax-free deal, a champion of unfettered free markets, and completely disdains government and most federal regulations. And Michael Moore is okay with that. There's an interesting interview by way of This American Life with the real guy behind Steven Soderbergh's new movie, The Informant, which I am looking forward to seeing. It seems like it's maybe a little more comedic version of something like Michael Mann's The Insider. The last note on the media memes is a disturbing one, but not all that surprising. John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas had an incestuous relationship with his daughter, Mackenzie Phillips, who I remember from One Day at a Time. That's by way of NME Exploding.com. And of course, that's exploding all over the web because we love dirty, disgusting things like that. There was an insane killer on the loose in Washington State. The media breathlessly announced, and I saw it in the papers, and I was like, oh, shit, that's kind of close.
Criminally insane killer is on the loose in Washington State, but the most shocking part of the story is how he got away. Authorities say Philip Paul disappeared while on a field trip to a state fair with other mental institution patients. Paul brutally murdered an elderly woman back in 1987 and was being treated for schizophrenia. Hospital workers didn't notice he was missing until at least 2 hours later.
Now he was captured. And when I was watching the story, when the guy was still on the loose and looking at the map, I was like, he's going to come to Portland. Now, where they captured him, he was essentially making a beeline straight to Portland, Oregon. The update on this story, out of Spokane by the AP, sheriff to bill Washington State $37,000 for their inmate hunt. And that story couldn't help but remind me of the Michael Keaton movie called The Dream Team, where a bunch of insane people on a field trip all escape. So that trailer's up there for you. Again, from the Los Angeles Times, doctor, 90 years old, killed his wife and then tried to kill himself. And we also have at least 7 dead in the Georgia floods. It, of course, has hit many more areas than that, but that's just the one note that I have on that. Oregon oddities, Oregon to be site for device to boost electric cars. This coming from Examiner.com. A device that some say is the key to making electric vehicles less expensive is expected to begin production in Oregon soon. The West Virginia note, this was interesting when I popped open the New York Times. I didn't even have to pop it open. On the front page earlier this week, above the fold, coal-fired plant in West Virginia is poised to store gas. Now, this is a big, long, involved story, and it involves coal and climate control. But I have it on very good authority that that process is a bunch of garbage, and they're throwing a bunch of money at something they don't even know if it's going to work, and that's essentially post-combustion capturing of all the bad stuff from coal. In scanning over the article, when I saw the Battelle Institute, that's one of those names and places. And again, as you sort of grow your knowledge about the key people, places, and names and organizations, so that when you see them, you can start to chart the connections for yourself. So when I saw Battelle, that's red flag. If you want to look up B-A-T-T-E-L-L-E, Battelle Memorial Institute, it's out of Ohio. It seems as though where it's going to be, where it's at, as far as this coal carbon capturing, it's got to be pre-combustion. And perhaps we'll have more on that sometime in the future. Quickly, though, the last two bits are going to come from cyberspacewar.com by way of Tech Radar. Obama honors IBM's Blue Gene supercomputer. President Obama presented International Business Machines, and its Blue Gene family, that's G-E-N-E, Blue Gene family of supercomputers with the National Medal of Technology and Innovation. The medal is the highest honor for technological achievement in America and was created in 1980 to encourage innovation and competitiveness. IBM has earned the National Medal of Technology and Innovation on 7 other occasions. This time, it's for the Blue Gene supercomputers that have helped map the human genome, investigate medical therapies, design nuclear weapons, simulate radioactive decay, and predict climate trends. Obama will personally bestow the award at a special White House ceremony on October 7th. I was just referencing, you know, knowing the organizations to chart the connections. You should be very aware of IBM and the Holocaust. The last bit from cyberspacewar.com is an ugly list of headlines. Here we go. DEFCON 924 posted this up on September 24th. F the CC, felonies, Netflix, and space junk. by way of the Associated Press, FCC, to propose net neutrality rules. And you go, hey, that sounds pretty good. However, by way of Wired, FCC position may spell the end of unlimited internet. Again, it's always one step forward, two steps back. More on the cybersecurity bill that is looming. And again, thanks to Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia, he of Standard Oil and doing business with the Nazis. That's how they made a lot of money. Should the president have the power to turn off the internet? We've got stuff from Computer World, as well as eWeek.com, American Free Press, and that's all on essentially the switch within this cybersecurity bill that gives the president unlimited power to say, national emergency, I'm turning off the internet. Cybersecurity one step forward from GovInfoSecurity. More on cybersecurity versus cyber warfare. Offense or defense, it's all pretty offensive. Obama cyber czar to regulate the information superhighway. That's from postchronicle.com. Will the U.S. president have the authority to shut down the internet? Essentially, he already does. They just want to codify it and really put it down in stone. Former U.S. cyber czar joins World Tech's advisory board. That's WURLD Tech. And that's by way of Mediacaster magazine. The FCC says Congress said we could spank Comcast for their peer-to-peer blocking. You'll recall we've gone over the torrent throttling from our good friends at Comcast when they're not busy hiring homeless people to fill up space at public hearings so people with real grievances can't get in. Plea deal clears Intel analyst of felony hacking. This is from Threat Level. And again, so when it comes from within the intelligence bodies, oh, it's no big deal. But if you're someone like Gary McKinnon, you're going to get extradited and you're screwed. Dozens report strange lights over Massachusetts. Again, from clicktohouston.com. This, of course, coincided with military testing. Millions under surveillance by Obama's new internet spy program. This from newswithviews.com, written by Jim Corey. And this all comes down to, well, it doesn't come down to, but it entails, again, we've gone over recently, the White House collecting up every bit of comment and information that anyone leaves on any of their websites and Twitter and all the social nets. White House takes a big step into the cloud with apps.gov. That's from Ars Technica. Netflix paid out $1 million for someone to write algorithms to make better recommendations. And then they thought it was such a success, they're trying to do something else. And then that made privacy advocates speak up. Again, I can't break down this story, much less get into algorithms. More from Federal Computer Week. Authentication said key to cybersecurity, but if we jump to Wired again and Danger Room, Pentagon wants all that space junk cleaned up. And the last note from NewScientist.com, too much radiation for astronauts to make it to Mars. So we're going to end this B-side 141 talking about Mars. And we're going to kick off episode 142 talking about the moon and everything else that's brewing in the world. I can glance at the front of Google News right now and see big headlines talking about a new economic world order. It's in your face. It's here. You should tell somebody about it. My name's James Evan Pilato. This has been the B-side of episode 141 of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.